Quick disclaimer, the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are provided for informational purposes only and should not be construed as an offer to buy or sell any securities or to make or consider any investment or course of action. For more information, go to bestevershow.com.
Get with your team, be with the team, but just get involved and do the due diligence checklist that you have as early as possible.
Welcome to the Best Ever Show, the world's longest running daily commercial real estate podcast. Our hosts interview commercial real estate experts every day to get you the best advice ever with none of the fluffy stuff.
Best ever listeners, welcome to the Best Real Estate Investing Advice Ever Show. I'm Slocum Reed. Today we are joined by Sean Thompson. This is an episode for our due diligence mini series. The conversation today with Sean will focus on apartment due diligence and the processes that we go through as apartment investors after we have a committed LOI or a signed contract and access to the property and to more detailed financials so that we know exactly what it is that we're buying and we know exactly how it is we can execute on our business plans. Sean is joining us from the east side of Manhattan. He is the Director of Property Management Operations for Property Management Stewards, a vertically integrated apartment investment firm. And as either an employee or a consultant, he has performed apartment due diligence in New York, New Jersey, Florida, Louisiana, Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, and Nevada, which I just learned also includes some deals in Cincinnati, Ohio, where I am. I'm interested to hear hopefully about those. The topic for this conversation is, within financial due diligence, how to conduct a proper multifamily lease audit. Sean, can you tell us a little bit more about your background, what you've got going on now, and then we'll dive into the multifamily lease audit.
Yes, my background started, 96. I remember I was in sales and a friend of mine who was a surgical assistant of a doctor at Memorial Sloan Kettering Care Hospital. He had a portfolio and he said, "Hey, I got a friend that has a portfolio. Why don't you help him out?" Because I didn't really want to stay in sales. I like three things. I like medical, I like legal, and I like real estate. But couldn't do medical because I can't take the blood. I'd faint. Law, I just take too long. And real estate, I said, "Hey, if you can get into real estate, why not get into real estate?" So I jumped in back at that point. And really, I wasn't an investor or even an owner, but I just got into the business and then utilized my common sense to help me, which I think is a lot of what was good for me to be able to sustain myself and go further in real estate. So, having had started back at that point, I helped that doctor to assess all of his assets, every unit that he had, put together an RFP to be able to get all of the work done because it wasn't performing financially. The portfolio wasn't performing, had high legal bills and all of those kind of things. So I got in, assessed all of the units, put together a bid to be able to get all the work done to bring all of the units back into a better state where the people can pay their rent and we won't have to have these high legal fees. All of that worked out. And then after sustaining that portfolio, the doctor sold the portfolio. So that's what begun my career. That was my first throw into real estate and investing and management. So from there, I just pursued a career of management, portfolio management, went to school, NYU, did finance degree in real estate. And pretty much from there, I just embarked on becoming a property manager and an asset manager, and then progressing into investing. And from there, I would say what I like about the idea of how we go about assessing these investments is pretty much this lease audit and this due diligence checklist and how we conduct it. And I'm here to be able to help bring some knowledge about how we can do a great lease audit and how that plays in the big overall grand scheme of buying this investment real estate.
Awesome. Let's talk about the way that you handle your multifamily lease audit. So there are a couple of topics I'd like to dive into. The first is that since we're talking about primary residences with multifamily, the vast majority of these leases, if not all of them, are going to have some of the same basic terms. The length of the lease, the expiration, the rent amount, the deposit amount, pet fees, things like that. And you can give a list if you'd like, Sean. Your list will be better than mine. When it comes to the most common terms that you're going to find in a lease, what is it that you and your team do, not only to verify that the information on paper is what's been given to you by the broker in advance, but also whether or not what is on paper is what is in force in actuality?
Yeah. Well, to answer that, I would say that there's different methods and different ways. There's times where we've used PI to be able to make sure certain information that we receive, is it accurate? But for the most part, it's really about the files and how the files are maintained. You're going to have information that's going to be in the files that's going to speak about different things with the residents. But the only thing that you can do is verify it. And you really have to sit and put the man hours in to do that lease audit and go through those documents to see if they're accurate, see if they're even legitimate, and also to kind of get an idea of how the management company that is running that property, how they more or less are making sure that their work that they're doing is something that can be quantifiable or something that can be justified. So to me, it's just having my team, we go there, we'll set a certain amount of days, we'll know how many units it's going to be, and we proceed in going through all of the paperwork as best we can to make sure that we understand and confirm the lease amount, the signatures, the date, and also the tenant selection criteria is a part of it too. Because if we have information on a particular lease, but that lease doesn't really follow along the lines of the tenant selection criteria the management company has, then we know that there's some fluff in there somewhere where it's not necessarily justifiable or legitimate. Aside from that is we verify security deposits. We also like to know the number of occupants within the house and also if there's any pets. And then we also look at if there's been any arrears, if there's been any legal action, to kind of get an idea of, and also looking at the people's employment, how long have they been at their job, to give you an idea of whether this particular tenant and the story that's being told by looking at this lease and these tenant files, if it fits the criteria.
Sean, it sounds like you're saying that getting physically into every single unit is effectively part of your lease audit.
Yeah, I've been doing that since that first time I got thrown into real estate and took that job with that doctor. And I find that you really have to see, you have to put eyes on things, especially on the assessment part. Once you get involved in, yeah, you deal with the operations, but getting involved physically and really being there. I remember we acquired a building in Brooklyn. We closed on the building, I think a little bit before or a little after 5 o'clock. Do you know that I did inspections of every apartment in that building and those people let me come in their apartment till 2 a.m. in Brooklyn because they wanted to know. They knew the building was being sold and they knew that this is my opportunity now to get everything out. So, hey, if you have willing participants to let you look in and see, of course, I'd want to do it as early as possible, not on the closing date. But yeah, if you did do it on the closing date and you got in, at least you got to see everything. And now you know how to be able to put your business model together so that that way your value added techniques and things can be in place.
That makes a lot of sense. Tell us more about your lease audit process. You're getting into every single unit. You are reviewing every single document and creating that comparison between what you're seeing on paper and what's happening in actuality. You're also tracking the financial history of the property to see how it compares to what you have on the paper leases. Tell us more about those processes.
So financial audit and leases and how that plays in the overall grand scheme of which is we're getting to a value. We need to get to a value position so that that way your offer, you can know that and feel comfortable about moving forward. So looking at just on a financial level, but with the backing of the leases and then now coupling that with the physical aspects of what you see, I guess the best way to explain it is financially, we need to know how the rents are coming in. On a monthly basis, you'll look at your rent collections, look at what amount of rents are not coming in. Then from there, it'll help me to draw looking at each of those apartments, why there may be something. So now, if we have an arrearage list and I have 200 unit, or let's just say a 75 unit property and 25% of that is not coming in, the rent's not coming in. So what I would do is, okay, rents are not coming in. I'm looking directly at the units as why those rents are not coming in, and then trying to determine as to why. And then from there, seeing in lease audit or in the tenant file audit, that will allow me to be able to paint that picture and to understand why, and then know from there how many residents may be in that situation. Because the idea is we want to, of course, bring value and buy a property that we know is going to be able to become more profitable. But if the history of it shows that there's things that are getting in the way from that happening, then we want to uncover those in advance as much as possible. And I think through the financial audit, along with the physical walking of the properties, and then also looking at the history of that person's tenancy, you'll be able to paint a really good picture of your financial state of the property. You'll be able to put together a nice business model for what you can do for value add. And then if there's some things that you need to do in regards to maybe taking legal action on certain residents that may have a history, not paying, or, you know, just not following house rules. That's another thing that I look at. How many residents may have not adhered to what the house rules are for this particular asset? And if there's just things that are standing out from a resident level, then that'll help me to be able to conduct a better due diligence and financial audit. And then that will help me with the lease audit to be able to put it all together and then now know this property is something that we can move forward with, or there's some things that we need to discuss before moving forward. Or maybe it could be a pass. Depends on what you find and how you went about the analysis to be able to make that determination.
We'll get back to the show. But first, some sponsors I'm confident you'll find value in learning more about. If you're an investor like me, you're probably looking for one platform to manage the banking and finance needs of your entire portfolio. The good news is there is one. It's called Baselane, and it's the number one banking platform built for independent real estate investors that reduces busy work so you can focus on growing your business. With Baselane, you can earn up to a 4.19% annual percentage yield and 5% cash back on debit card spending with no monthly fees. With a simplified view of your cash flow and expenses, you can retire those tedious spreadsheets. You can also manage unlimited virtual accounts and cards, and even open separate accounts for each property or unit. Join more than 40,000 real estate investors who trust Baselane for their banking, property management, and bookkeeping. Head over to baselane.com/Joe and sign up today for a chance to win a $500 Amazon gift card. That's baselane.com/Joe.
I have a question, Sean. It's kind of outside of the scope of this conversation, but I still really want to ask it. As a fellow property manager, I tend to buy or take over management of more distressed properties where not only are you going to find higher vacancy up front, but also you're going to find what I would call an inherited tenant base that is below market quality. When you're looking at the property type, the apartment type, the submarket, the neighborhood, the block, the street that you're on, what the neighboring properties are, I'm often taking over properties where I believe, and this almost always comes true, but I believe that I am capable of getting a higher quality tenant base into the property than the one that I'm inheriting. So bringing that situation, and with all of the nodding that you're giving me, it sounds like this is a familiar situation to you as well, Sean, but bringing it back to the lease audit and the work that you're doing to figure out all of the potential issues that you will come across with your inherited tenant base. What is it that you do to figure out how much better of a future tenant base you can place in a property? Kind of like the tenant base that you're inheriting is the result of the way that the property's been operated, the way that it's been managed for the last several years. When you know that you're going to bring in your operation and you're going to raise the property standards, you're going to raise your standards for the tenants that you accept, how do you figure out in the due diligence process how high you'd be able to raise your standards in that location above the tenant base that you're inheriting?
Okay. I've been a broker in New York and other states for over 15 years. So what I would say is...
Can I give an example?
Yeah, give me an example.
Hopefully that gives you some time to think.
Some time to think, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So let me tell you about one of my properties, actually, that still frustrates me. It's performing well financially, and we've got a higher quality tenant base. When it comes to income and credit, background, collections, all of those things, we've been able to fill our apartments by raising our standards and only placing tenants who meet our minimum criteria at a minimum, where the vast majority of the inherited tenant base just straight up wasn't there. We actually got their applications during the due diligence process, which I don't always get, and the inherited tenant base would not have qualified based on my criteria. We've been able to get the credit scores, income, backgrounds that we look for, but I haven't been able to raise rent. For some reason, I believe that the rents I'm able to get there with my criteria are a little bit below market. So I wonder if my criteria is just a little bit too high for that part of the neighborhood. I can fill the building, but I'm filling the building a little bit below the rents that I think the neighborhood would get. I'm not willing to bring my criteria down because I know the kinds of issues that happen when I go below my current qualification criteria. But taking that as an example and looking at your processes, Sean, how is it that you figure out how much you can improve the tenant base of a property from the tenant base that you're inheriting when it comes to credit, income, criminal history, smoking, etc.?
One thing that I think that's important when you have that kind of a situation and you're trying to find where you think you can go to that next level with your rents, well, I would say is I use my real estate broker and salesperson skills where I'm looking at comps. You really do take a hard look at your block, at your neighborhood, where the property is positioned, and you start getting some comparables around that area. You look at what are some of the high rents, and you don't have to necessarily call a property. You can call a broker because that's their job. If they're leasing apartments, they'll know on 46 and 9th Avenue, I can get this rent in 34th Street and 2nd Avenue. So by going about it in that way, at least from a comparable, you'll know what are some of the high, mids, and lows. And then from there, it's just basically your property, how you market it, the curb appeal of that property, and the draw that you will have and how you reach people to apply. But I think that that will give you a good basis. And it may be that you have to run an apartment vacant a little longer than you might have want to because you're kind of testing that new level out and you want to see if you can draw. So it may be a little more of a vacancy time that you want, but at least I'll wait 2-3 weeks to get a couple of more $100 or whatever the case may be on a higher rent over that period of time because it just adds that much more value to the property.
That makes a lot of sense. Wrapping up this conversation, I've just got a couple more questions for you, Sean. When you are reviewing the lease documents, give us some examples of uncommon lease terms that you have found that have been potential serious red flags. I'm not talking about low rents or something that everyone is going to foresee, but beyond the basic terms of the lease, what are some things that you've seen that have either been red flags for you or that have caused problems for your firm or other apartment investors that you know?
Well, two things that I say that stand out is concessions and just former or pending tenant actions. You may be so focused on the major things of that checklist doing your lease audit, but like you said, those things that are a little bit below the scope or don't stand out as much and can be headaches is just more or less you want to know if the tenant that you are inheriting, if they can pay the rent and if they have adhered to your property rules, so that way everyone can live habitually and not cause problems within the development. So some of the things that people may miss is concessions. When I say concessions, well, how much money did we give off to be able to get this tenant in? Were we at a low occupancy level at that time? And did we do that? So did we learn whether doing that was good or not? We can look at that now that we're at this place with this tenant. That's one thing. And then, like I said, pending tenant actions. Did we have a lot of nuisance? Maybe there's some late payers. And I'm not opposed to late payers because I understand I've lived my life and there's been times where my income may not be as steady enough what I need to hit that month or before late fee time period comes. But there's some people that will pay the late fee, but they'll pay it just a little late. So not necessarily that, but other actions in regards to just being able to live in the community, not disturb the community, but also contribute to the community. So I would just say, looking at two things off the top of my head, the concessions and any underlying tenant actions that may have taken within that period of time that that resident has been there. And I would say just the number of occupants, because you can have a household where you can have a certain amount of occupants and it could be the occupants that can be causing problems. So now you have to hope. Now, let's just imagine if you have a household of four or five people and the head of households aren't causing issues, but the other occupants are. What did that management or what does that lease audit or that tenant file show you about that? And you need to look at that, because you have it where you just skimp by that and now you have a household that has a person that has been causing problems, but it's not the main person of the household. Now you have to deal with that and you'll be inheriting that. And that can be a problem because, like you said, it's not the head of household, it's other occupants. So those are two things that stand out. And just verifying the information, you know, just making sure that, because there's so many scams and so many different ways of how people can show and do different things when they're applying for apartments or once they're in apartments. So I would just still stick with that thing of looking at the paperwork, making sure that there's no red flags, and looking under and between the lines, not just head of household, not just major terms of the lease, but other things that may have transpired that aren't of a major level, but can have a major impact because you are inheriting that resident.
That makes a lot of sense. On that note, Sean, what is your best ever due diligence advice?
Get out and get on the ground. Be on the ground. Don't sit in your office. Even if you have a team, get with your team, be with the team, but just get involved and do the due diligence checklist that you have as early as possible. When you're looking and you like that property, before you even make a call, try to get as much as you can on your own. So as early as you can in the due diligence process, get involved, and then make sure that you're involved enough, even if you may not be there physically, but your team is there physically, so therefore you trust your team, so now you are there physically. Don't take it from a standoff point of view. Get involved and really see it, because real estate, it's about the asset, but it's about knowing and seeing and learning what that asset is physically, not just from afar or not just from a third party and not just from files and paperwork. Make the files and paperwork be justified through off your physical involvement.
Last question. Where can people get in touch with you?
My email is sthompson2265@gmail.com. Because of this transition of me from the East Coast to the West Coast, I haven't done a whole website and all of that public social media stuff. So find me on my email.
Thank you, Sean. Your email address will be in the show notes. Thank you again. Best ever listeners, thank you as well for tuning in. If you've gained value from this episode, please do subscribe to our show. Leave us a 5-star review and share this episode with a friend that you know we can add value to through our conversation today. Thank you and have a best ever day.
Hi, best ever listeners. Joe Fairless here again. And one last thing before you go, would you like to receive a short weekly email with proven tips from experienced investors, free tools and resources, and a roundup of the week's most relevant news and best ever content? Well, if so, join the community of nearly 15,000 commercial real estate passive and active investors who receive the best ever newsletter. Just go to bestevercre.com/access and you'll get the very next one. I hope you enjoyed this episode. And as always, thank you for listening and have a best ever day.